Let me add here that we're going to save a little time for questions at the end. So if you have a question, you know, make note of it when you get it. If you do have a question, try to make it general to appellate practice and not something very specific to a case that you have pending somewhere right now. But we are going to save some time for that. And based on what y'all just told me, and I think this is going to come first to you, Justice Goodwin.
Okay.
How much do you feel that you can communicate with appellate practitioners? Unless people come to a conference like this and hear you two specifically say what you want to hear, how can you communicate that? Can you put something on your website? Can you issue, like, pre-submission orders? The tradition for years and years and years in appellate practice has been you're on the inside, behind the wall. Those of us laying siege on the outside don't know what the hell is going on behind the wall, but that doesn't make any sense to me anymore. So how do you feel that you can communicate with practitioners?
Well, these are our opportunity to do so, as are our local rules. And then we have some, like, practitioner tips for practicing before the court. Those are all on the website. I'm gonna make a pitch because I don't have an opportunity to communicate with some of my higher courts. And one of the things that I kind of heard reference to in the earlier speaker, and I have, like, the rules chair right there, I want to make a pitch for amending one of the trap rules that would allow, right now, if we say do not publish in a criminal case, the rules say it has no precedential value. And we've had some debates about that internally at the court. What do we do with that information? How do we proceed? Are we bound by prior cases? Are we not? And I think that we all could agree that an unpublished opinion from an intermediate appellate court certainly has due process would require that we look at prior decisions. But our rules don't really provide for those other decisions to be precedential. I think that that's also why you see an increase, I think that you'll continue to see an increase, at least at the Third Court of Appeals, on us publishing decisions in criminal cases. I'd like to make a pitch that we have a similar rule like what we have on the civil side that says, you know, before X time, prior cases are not precedential. But after that point, unpublished cases do have some precedential value. If you have an unpublished decision that y'all are looking at and that you're relying on that you think is instrumental, comes from the Third Court of Appeals, it's pivotal to your case, there is a case out of the Texas Supreme Court that talks about a very similar issue. And they basically say, hey, first in time is what controls. Other appellate courts should look on a transferred case to the decisions from the transferee court. And if you're interested in that, it's the case that came out of the Texas Supreme Court. It's not the CCA, so they haven't spoken yet on this issue, is Michkov versus Borromeo. And I'll just give you the cause number. It's 210326 and 210331. And that's Texas Supreme Court, May 13th. I think that is one of the things that the courts struggle with, is what do we do with our unpublished cases? And we get so many. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we feel like we're drinking from a fire hose. And so the do not publish designation is valuable to us, but I think that the rule is regarding do not publish cases is cumbersome for us, so, which is completely off topic, but I think relevant to the audience.
Well, an appellate court can communicate with appellate practitioners as much as it wants, so long as it does so in a manner that does not violate the rules of ethical conduct. And I know we're getting some ethics credit for our presentation today, so... And also, assuming the court is openly communicating with all parties at the same time, I see no reason why the court should not be free to guide practitioners as to questions and areas of particular interest. The Seventh Court looks for opportunities to express to attorneys best briefing and argument practices through presentations to our local bar associations, to the young lawyers, through paralegal groups, and of course, CLE presentations. We sit at the Texas Tech School of Law usually twice a year. We've been to Baylor Law School also recently, and we've heard cases down there, kind of appeals on wheels, to give the students an up-close and a personal look behind the scenes for appellate courts, and also to meet with them and answer their questions about appellate processes. So I think we can certainly do more, but we do try to do that as much as possible.
Okay. Yes, obviously, if you communicate with one party, you communicate with all parties. And by the same token, if we write a letter to the court asking about something or informing them of something, you copy your opposing counsel. I want to ask one more thing about the contents of briefs. Do you want to see a detailed statement of facts in every case, or would you rather have a smaller summary of the statement of facts and then set out the pertinent facts under each point of error to that point?